The numbers told the story. They always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Thursday morning to you. It is a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network, VSiN.com, the VSiN app, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, all proudly brought to you by BetMGM's Gil Alexander, Kelly Midland in the house. Kelly, we are booked.
Yeah, we are.
Guests everywhere. John Legaisa joins us to talk National Football League. He's got a couple prop bets for tonight's Thursday night NFL game between the Packers and the Titans. Any pre-flop for you on that game, Kelly?
No, nothing pre-flop, but I might get to a couple bets before kickoff. We can discuss a little bit more.
We will. We'll discuss.
You're doing your eloquent intro. I don't want to interrupt.
Thank you for eloquence. Appreciate that. Adam Kramer joins us to talk college football, all things college football. The end of the Alabama dynasty. Talk about that a bit as well. Bill Krakenberger joins us from New Jersey. Jason Weingarten from Under a Cloud of Smoke. And Danielle Alvari, VSiN Sports Betting Analyst. We'll talk UCLA, USC with Danielle later. Nice for Danielle to make an appearance. Is that tough booking Danielle for the show?
Oh, she loves us. She was excited to come on.
That she'd do.
She ripped you on text. It was funny.
She ripped me on text?
She was like, what all you want to talk about? And I'm like, well, we'll definitely hit the UCLA-USC football game. Yeah. She texted me. I'm like, I'm putting together the rundown right now. I'm like, we're going to hit the football game. We'll talk about each of the basketball programs. And she's like, okay, you can throw the Oregon game in there too. You know, if Gil reads the rundown. I'm like, yep, that's fair enough.
She knows me well. It's like she's on to me or something. So much to get to, too. Bill Barnwell wrote this great piece at ESPN.com, which I want to, I don't know, we'll sprinkle throughout the show because it's about teams that have been, we'll use the word fortunate and unfortunate, teams that have been fortunate and unfortunate in the NFL thus far this season. We won't give away all the details because, you know, we'll give Bill his juice, probably should go read the piece as well. But we'll highlight a few teams of just things that are not sustainable or, by the way, to the good and to the bad. We'll highlight a few teams. And one team, by the way, in the NFL that has been both fortunate and unfortunate. What do you make of them? So we'll talk about that as well on the show. Some news and notes from yesterday. First of all, let me just randomly go into some stuff. College basketball, Gonzaga gets murdered by Texas. Did you see that?
Not a single second.
Just an annual reminder. Once we get to March, because you know how this goes in college basketball. Because we have a lot of people who love college basketball at this network and beyond, right? People love college basketball. I loved it as a kid growing up in the Mid-Atlantic, ACC, Big East country. There's nothing greater than 80s and 90s college basketball. But here we are in this day and age where everybody props up Gonzaga each and every year. This is just your reminder. They play in the West Coast Conference. They beat up on really bad teams. They're not that good ever. I know, I get it. They got to the championship a couple times.
I thought Pepperdine was supposed to be good this year.
Oh, no, they're not.
No, nah, I mean, that is
fair. Let the record show you brought them up, not me.
That is fair. One of the few college basketball betting strategies that I have year in and year out, Gil, is if Gonzaga's playing an in-conference opponent and falls behind in the first half, I hammer the second half line or hammer them live because it is – just a matter of time before they storm back and win by 25.
Let the Gonzaga hate wash over me from people at Gonzaga. Some other stuff, too. One, Kyrie could come back as early as Sunday.
Yep.
So he has met the demand that he will wear a yarmulke for every game the rest of the year.
Yeah, he's fulfilled or close to fulfilling his to-do list set by the NBA and, I don't know, the Nets. It's a ridiculous thing.
The yarmulke wasn't one of those demands, no?
No, I don't think it was.
I've been preparing that joke for 3 weeks. You didn't even react.
I mean,
you didn't even react. I had so many levels of that joke. There was like a DEFCON 3 version of that joke, if you know what I mean. I had a higher level, but I decided to ratchet it down.
Well, I mean, it might have been part of his steps because, like, one of them was getting to know the Jewish faith and community more. Yeah. So who knows?
Yeah. Only I'm allowed to make that joke, by the way. Here, and then a couple more Major League Baseball awards. To no surprise of anyone, really. Justin Verlander wins another Cy Young for the American League, and Sandy Alcantara wins it for the Marlins of the National League. Well, he wins it for himself. But good on them. They were the favorites most of the way down the stretch of the season. And then Steph dropped 50 last night for the Warriors. They lose again on the road to the Phoenix Suns, despite the 50-burger. 130 to 119. Are they, they're winless on the road this year.
Yeah, I watched most of that game last night. I don't think there's a ton to, I wouldn't read into this too much. Warriors fans and bettors out there, don't freak out, because Gil, I don't need to pull up a box score. And when a team shoots over 50% from three.
Yeah, I'll do it.
You're usually going to lose. I don't care who you're playing.
We say, I say it all the time. If you had access to the box scores of games of the NFL, all you would really need is turnovers, and you would win 90% of your bets. And in the NBA, all you really need is three-point percentage. And you'd win probably this, close to the same amount.
I had a silly betting night last night in the NBA. I ended up betting way more than I thought.
Silly good, silly bad.
A little bit of both. A little bit of both, Gil. We had I had that Clint Capella prop that I did give out on the show here yesterday. They decided to, unless there's an injury thing I'm missing, I'm assuming they decided to send him to the bench and go small against the Celtics in the third quarter when he was well on his way to cashing over for me. So that didn't get home. I lost on the Wizards pre-flop, lost on the Hawks live, one on the Bucks live, one on the Raptors live, one on the Rockets pre-flop. So it was one of those fun nights of live trading very often and watching a lot of games and then coming out, losing a few bucks in the end.
You have a bet tonight, NBA?
Nothing tonight.
Nothing tonight.
So weird card tonight. There's three games and they're all late tips. If you're East Coasters, 10 to 10:30 p.m. tips for you. Enjoy.
Thursday night football tonight. The Packers and the Titans, which, again, I had a lot of success betting in-game on these primetime games. A lot of these matchups I don't really like pre-flop, but the thing you need to know about tonight's game are the injury reports, as always.
Yeah.
But specifically here tonight, Devondre Campbell, the Packers linebacker, is out with a knee injury. Romeo Doubs is out with an ankle, the wide out. A couple questionable players for the Packers as well, including David Bakhtiari, the left tackle. But really, it's the Titans side of the ball. We talked about this on Guessing Lines on Monday about how the Titans were still able to beat the Broncos and still able to do so while sacking Russell Wilson six times, it should be noted. Like, the Broncos offense is so bad that the Titans played without five defensive starters, including Jeffrey Simmons, Amani Hooker, Bud Dupree, Christian Fulton got scratched pregame. Then they had three other people on defense, lost to injuries during the game. They still sacked him six times. Well, here's the deal for this game. Bud Dupree is out again with a hip. Amani Hooker, their safety, with a shoulder. Lottie Johnson, defensive back, hamstring. Ben Jones, concussion. Their kicker, Randy Bullock, out.
Yeah.
With a calf injury.
Which
is
big.
So Josh Lambeau.
Yes.
Apparently is a Tennessee Titan.
Josh Lambeau, fresh off of losing his lawsuit battle against the NFL for that Urban Meyer dust-up. Do you remember that?
Oh, I do remember
from
that.
Was that preseason? I don't even know. Beginning of last season.
What did he do, push him or something?
Yeah, it was like the knee or something, right? Yeah, it was like a kick. It was like a little kick.
Just stop for a moment. Do you believe we lived through that Urban Meyer thing? Like, that is
just absurd.
It's the moment. That is the quintessential moment of his coaching tenure.
So, yeah, that just got shot down, I believe it was yesterday.
So I guess here's my point about all these Titans injuries. They were able to overcome it against the Broncos, right? Because the Broncos' defense is awesome, but their offense is just
terrible.
Horrific. Sacked them six times even without those players. But this is Aaron Rodgers and the Packers, and I know Aaron Rodgers and the Packers have not had a good football season. But, so the instinct for me is, okay, I would think the Packers, and by the way, Packers 3-point favorites, I'd think they'd be able to overcome this, totals 41, but then there's the Mike Vrabel factor where you're like, I have so much respect for Mike Vrabel. Does he figure out a way to keep this close or even win it?
Yeah, and you are talking about Green Bay rush defense. It's a bottom five unit. I think they're fifth or sixth the last in the league against the run. And that's a factor. It's a heavy Green Bay lean for me, though, Gil. I do think that win last week was a shot in the arm a little bit. I think Rodgers was able to...
It's Green Bay or nothing for me.
Yeah, I think Rodgers was able to figure out a little bit how this offense needs to operate last week. Unlike what we saw 2 weeks ago when he tossed those three INTs. It's a pretty heavy lean for me, Green Bay, right now. I don't know if I'm going to get involved pregame or in-game. I think the total's still too high. I think we're talking about teams that, unless it's Derrick Henry running all over the Packers, and even maybe then they're just running clock and the under gets home anyways. But you're talking about two teams that I think their defenses are a little ahead of where the offenses are right now.
Speaking of the Titans, and I mentioned that Bill Barnwell article, and we're all about here on this show through the years, really the biggest handicapping tenet of them all, regardless of the sport. We used to do this in baseball most. Certainly do it in tennis, too. What is sustainable? What is not sustainable? And one of the teams that Barnwell cited as being lucky thus far this year have been the Tennessee Titans, who are 6-3. What has gone right for them? They have a great record in one-score games. I'll summarize. Offensive red zone performance has been better than average, to say the least. Defensive third down success, remember the most high leverage plays in the National Football League, the sort of runners in scoring position moments of the NFL. Defensive third down success has been above what it probably should be by expectation. They've had a lopsided schedule, but here's just give you an idea. In 2019, the Titans defense, 7th outside the red zone, 7th inside the red zone.
Consistent.
2020, 4th outside the red zone, 3rd inside the red zone.
Consistent.
2021, 18th outside the red zone, 12th inside the red zone.
Sort of consistent.
This year, 29th outside the red zone, 1st inside the red zone. Or is that defense or offense?
Is it weird that I
Either
that
way,
I
you
love
understand.
That. It's probably defense. I mean, if that's the case, bend, don't break. I mean, that's a lot of coaching right there.
But the point of that is that you're supposed to be pretty consistent from being outside the red zone and inside the red zone, relatively. The fact that you're 29th outside and 1st inside, unsustainable, is the point of that. So just keep that in mind when you're factoring in the Titans in your calculus tonight's game and beyond. By the way, that refers to their EPA, inside and outside the red zone, over the last season. Coming back, more of that, and John Legesa next.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
It's time to download Nevada's premier sports betting app, BetMGM Sports. BetMGM with all your favorite wagering options, along with in-game betting, boosted odds, specials, and much more. Download the BetMGM app today and stop by any MGM casino on the Strip with your state-issued ID to open an account. Start placing sports bets from anywhere in Nevada. Whatever your sport, whatever your betting style, you're going to love BetMGM's state-of-the-art technology and fan-friendly specials every day of the week. Visit BetMGM for terms and conditions. Must be 21 or older and physically located in Nevada. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-522-4700. Skill Alexander, Kelly Bidlin. So just to clarify again, because I want to be clear on this, because as we were going through the Titans thing, I was like, wait, first in a red zone, they must be talking about offense. So misspoke, not defense. The point remains, though, right? The point remains that on offense, consistent inside and outside the red zone in 2019, 2020, and somewhat consistent in 2021, but completely ridiculous in 2022. 29th outside the red zone, the Titans offense, 1st inside the red zone. And you can say, well, that's because of Derrick Henry, but Derrick Henry's been on that team all those years too, before that. So it is just something to keep in mind, because the most interesting thing about sports betting, and there's so many interesting things, is we can watch games, but as Dean Oliver, the NBA analytics guy, said back in the day, human beings can watch one game better than analytics, but analytics see everything. And so we don't process, our brains don't process that difference for the Titans. And so in the most high leverage moments inside the red zone, they're the best.
Yeah, I guess my takeaway from that is with Derrick Henry, I would almost always expect them to be a good red zone team.
Hasn't
right?
been the case, though.
But as far as outside the red zone, I think that's where you look at the losses of A.J. Brown, and then what they had to do as far as, quarterback play this year with Ryan Tannehill missing a couple games and stuff like that. I think it becomes really predictable of what you're going to try to do on first, second down as far as running the ball with Henry, easier to stop on defense. I think there's some of that going on this
year. Yeah, well, let me clarify the clarification then. Yeah, because what you're saying is they are kind of always good inside the red zone. It's just that when you really stink outside of it like they have this year,
yeah,
it becomes a little more eye-opening.
Yeah.
Sure. Let me just give you we'll get to John Legesa here in a moment, a couple other examples from that Barnwell piece this morning. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who I have certainly criticized this year, he views them as a very unlucky football team in their 5-5 season thus far. Outside of the red zone, this is on defense. The Buccaneers have the league's 5th best defense outside of the red zone in terms of expected points per play for the opposing offense. Inside the 20-yard line, though, inside the red zone, they haven't been anywhere near as effective. They rank 18th in EPA per play allowed in the red zone. So opposing teams have converted 63% of their red zone possessions into touchdowns. That's the eighth highest rate in the league. So the point being that the Bucs should get better at that.
Yeah.
Tampa also has been unlucky when footballs have hit the ground this season. Remember, fumble luck. We talk about fumble luck. Picks, interceptions, well, maybe you can assess a quarterback and have some sort of predictive quality to that, although some might argue with that. Fumbles, though, when that ball hits the ground, it's completely, not completely random, but it's largely random. The average team recovers just under 58% of their fumbles on offense. So just above 50% typically, 57%, an offense recovers of their own fumbles. It makes sense because it usually falls right down below them, so they're going to have a little more than one out of two. But the Bucs have only recovered three of their nine fumbles this year, 33%. And so by the way, the same math, you can probably guess that defenses then recover about 42% of the opposing offense's fumbles. And Bucs opponents have fumbled 12 times. The Bucs have only recovered four of those. So, by the way, that's tied with the Browns for the worst fumble recovery rate in the league. So we'll just go through a couple more of these as the show goes on. But it's very interesting, again, from a handicapping perspective moving forward. While I'm sitting here and not randomly, but consistently saying how bad this team is, what the brain is not processing is what analytics are, which is, oh, yeah, keep in mind that these things happening, fumble luck, defensive performance inside and outside the red zone, maybe your brain's not processing them. Keep that in mind in your handicapping.
I think it's also a reason why, you know, places like Football Outsiders, who we respect very much, Aaron Schatz, has had Tampa Bay near, you know, top 10 or near top 10 all season long over stuff like that. Also feels like the Bucs have had a million drops this season. Just watching those games feels like they've had big drops and big moments.
And all of this besides all their injuries, which the injuries we know about, and the injuries, sadly for them, look like they're still continuing in some respects. Guys out for the year, some defensive injuries that are still in play as well. Let's talk to John Legace, everybody. He's got some thoughts on the NFL, including a couple prop bets tonight. John is both an NFL and MLB writer for The Athletic, host of the Mix and Corked Stats show at Mayo Media, at John Legace on Twitter. How you doing, Johnny?
Hey, Gil, what's up? You know, I want to say to that Bucs point, as unlucky as they may have been analytically, they have to feel pretty lucky playing in that division. So that kind of balanced out already. And if they are the team that the spreadsheets say they are, then they're going to have every chance to make the playoffs and then make some noise. To the Titans, man, you make a lot of really good points. The Titans are this team of extremes this year, right? I mean, it's this excellent, excellent run D that becomes a funneled pass D. They're excellent as far as the run game on offense. They are putrid as far as the pass game on offense, but to that also kind of yin and yang on the defense, and I think this is the story of today's game. They're number one in pressure and hurries while being 32nd in blitzes run while also being first in running the two-high shell, the dreaded two-high shell that's been, you know, making mincemeat of scoring everywhere, right? We're seeing that reflected in the overs. And it's that hyper use or willingness to abandon weaknesses that I think is what puts Vrabel to the fore. You know, I think sometimes coaches are afraid of, that's it, guys. We can't abandon this because the newspaper, the media, or some guy yelling at a computer screen is going to criticize them. And I don't think Vrabel really cares. That's going to be my story today. I'm really interested to see how Rodgers responds. Everyone is now chasing this bounce back for the Packers. Watson had a ridiculous blow-up game. This is true. However, all three of the touchdowns, all of the production, Gil, was in man coverage. Dallas plays a ton of man, and we know they're very aggressive, right? Also, they didn't get to the quarterback. So with that time, that play develops. Rodgers hit his man. Watson is a beast. He was able to separate. Tennessee does not play that style of defense whatsoever. They're going to play too high the entire game and use that front 4/5 because, again, Vrabel is very good at papering over what he's trying to do. It's very confusing. You see 7 down, 8 down, 5 up, guys walking around looking like they're getting ready to take a coffee break, and then all of a sudden it's blitzing. I say not necessarily blitzing, but pressure from everywhere, right? High pressure, low blitz. So I'm into the low A-dot guys today. Give me Lazard and give me Tanyan. I'm not really sure where they're going. They're both the top two zone targets. Tanyan has something like 32 catches, 270 yards, and a score from the zone. And we know Lazard is going to work that intermediate part of the zone. Cobb is back, but I'm not sure how much run he's going to get. So when I saw these big juicy odds on these alt props, again, you know, Gil, I'm really always about sustainability. And sometimes I worry when we give a single play, it becomes very binary. You either win or you lose. Where if we can give users, listeners, novices, two plus odd plays, then if they hit one, hey, you make money. Where if you bet two bets at minus 110 and only hit one, same risk, you're not a winner, right? There's some of that sustainability you and I are always talking about behind the scenes. So when I saw the alt prop, I got Tanyan plus 40 yards. I think it's plus 155. Remember, these things are going to move. And then Lazard is over 60 at that same plus 158, plus 60 again. You know, plus 160, it's going to shift. So if we get one of the two, we get a nice profit ROI. And if we get them both, then we really hit it nice. So give me Lazard over and Tanyan over. Because of what I mentioned, I don't think the plays are going to be able to develop to get Watson the ball deep. I think the Titans are going to do what they do. They're going to get pressure. And it's just a fact of the matter. Rodgers is not as effective against his own. So give me Tanyan and give me Lazard, the two low A-dot guys, to go over that rec prop. And if it wasn't for Henry's foot, which I'm a little bit worried about, right, we saw his usage drop from those beefy 30 carries a game to more like 21, I'd be into the Titans winning this one outright because, like I said, I'm just not necessarily buying the Packers all of a sudden making a few big plays being this world-beating team. But without Henry, he is, I was saying this morning on my show, he's not just the engine. He's the engine and the gasoline in it, you know, with the low-profile tires that makes the race car go. If I don't know he's getting 25-plus, I don't know if I could back him to win. But I do like the Packers, in, regardless of game script, to hit those rec props because I think they're going to have to abandon the run.
Lazard, 60 yards on the all total, and Tanyan, 40 yards on the all total. Legacy going over on both. You got 30 seconds here. What's your favorite other play on Sunday?
J-E-T-S, Jets, Jets, Jets. I can't believe my green and white looks really good, and I can't believe I'm saying this, what this bet is based on. The Jets right now are the more functional and well-coached team across all phases than the Patriots. I can't listen, this is a fact, and I am not a Jets homer. I think they stink, but you want to talk about stink, the Patriots really stink because it's not just a lack of talent. It's dysfunction. It's dysfunction. Mac Jones has been worse than Zach Wilson, who has had more games than not without a turnover. And if he doesn't turn a ball over, that Jets defense is going to mow the Patriots down. I can't see them hitting the team total at all. I'd be surprised if they get to 17.
John Legace, everybody. John, I always got to like pry the words out of you, man. It's a struggle with you. I really appreciate it. John, appreciate it. Mayo Media Network for John, at John Legace, L-A-G-H-E-Z-Z-A. College Football with Adam Kramer next.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
College basketball started. Now's the time to get your copy of our annual betting guide at over 400 pages. It's our biggest betting guide ever with odds, trends, power ratings, and analysis on every team. Our team of experts includes Greg Hoops Peterson, Matt Eumanns, Jonathan Von Tobel, Wes Reynolds. They provide their predictions for win totals, futures, conference champions, tournament teams, and the breakdown of all 60 coaching changes since last season. The only way to get the guide, though, is to become a VSiN Pro subscriber. Sign up now for just $99 and get VSiN Pro access to everything we do all the way through the Super Bowl. Sign up today at VSiN.com/subscribe. It's Gil Alexander. Adam Kramer joins us now, one of the iconic Twitter handles of all time, at Kegs and Eggs, to talk college football. Man, oh man, we are at the home stretch trying to figure out who's going to be the four teams in the college football playoff. Adam, good morning to you, sir.
Good morning. Hope all is well. And yeah, we got another big week.
Another big week. Let me just start before we get into this week, because you touched on this. You not only touched on it, but it was a pretty big eulogy, if I may call it that. Is this it? Can we pour out a 40 for the Alabama dynasty once and for all?
You know, there are enough warning signs, and it's not just this year, but over the last couple of years, that they're finally vulnerable. And quite frankly, if you're looking for the new Alabama, it's Georgia. Georgia lost, 15 draft picks and rebuilt itself to be the number one team. It is a more efficient and more powerful version of Alabama. And Alabama, by the way, is going to say farewell to one of its greatest offensive players and one of its greatest defensive players they've had under Nick Saban, yeah. right? So I think when you look at it, when Nick Saban is raising his arms in the air and celebrating in joy when you're beating Ole Miss as a double-digit favorite, what have they become, right? What yeah. is he? He can't experience joy. He can't be excited about that game. So I just think that we are seeing the end of an era. We're seeing a coach now who's, you know, in his 70s, and I think if you've wondered when that moment has come, and this story's been written like 800 times over the last 6 years, this feels very real. And I think the Alabama you once knew, and we're seeing it now, that we're not talking about them to make the playoff unless something really weird happens. I think it's going to be different moving forward.
Yeah, and you said it. When he raised his hands, when he beat Ole Miss, I didn't say it out loud, but I processed it. I was like, oh, wow, you know, there. That's interesting. Should have lost to Texas maybe if you were stayed in that game. Could have lost to A&M, all the things. It's just a...
Which, how bad does that game look?
Oh,
now,
my
right?
God, like, does that look bad?
I mean, how horrible does that look? So and again, Bryce Young, the strategy this year, and Bryce Young has been magical, like magical. He doesn't have a lot of players to throw to. The offensive line's a mess. I think you wonder what this team's going to look like next year. And you wonder, frankly, how long Saban's going to want to do this, because he's not going to hang around. I've talked enough to him, too. When the writing is on the wall, he's going to say it's no longer working for me. And I wonder when that moment is.
Well, if he's looking around and he's seeing NIL and he's seeing, you know, transfer portals and stuff, like Tuscaloosa ain't exactly, hey, wait, I could do all this elsewhere. Okay, one more thing before we get to this week. I mentioned this on air a couple days ago. And this is my sort of cause of the week. I'm trying to make the case, Adam, that TCU, let's say TCU loses to Baylor this week, that even if that happens and they win the Big 12 championship, that I feel like they still should be in play in a certain scenario for the college football playoff. And here's the scenario. Michigan loses to Ohio State. USC loses to UCLA, very possible this weekend. We'll get your thoughts on that momentarily.
Yep.
And what's the third? Oh, and LSU does not win out. If those three things happen and TCU loses to Baylor but still wins the Big 12 championship, shouldn't they still be in over everybody else, including a one-loss ACC champ?
The metrics say absolutely. The reputation says no. And what I mean like by that is we're just waiting for TCU to lose. And collectively as a unit, it's like even this week in Baylor, right, when you have a game with this spread, it is fascinating to see. So I think that you're right in theory. What would be very interesting is like a TCU-Clemson situation, a one loss of each, right, and a conference champion. And I think people are just genuinely annoyed by Clemson. As they should be, right? It's not a beautiful brand of football to watch, especially when you've got Mr. Drake May on the other side just dazzling. So it'll be interesting to see. But, yes, if that's the head-to-head, then I think TCU should win it. So, but from a reputation standpoint, doesn't it feel like we're not there? You're beating the right drum,
and that's why I bring it up, right? Because it's like, you know, reputation, really, we're still doing that? Come on.
We are. We are. And the conflict, the conversation, I've seen Mr. The Bear, doing this on Twitter, talking about, you know, who you beat and when you beat them, ranked teams at the time. Right, when, you know, a Kansas or an Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, Kansas State, there's a stretch of TCU's season that if you look at, and that is your logic, you say, wow, that's as impressive of a stretch of season as any team
sure
in college
is.
Football.
Yeah.
But the metrics even go beyond that and say this is one of the best strength of schedules in the country, and yet they're just a 2.5-point favorite this week. And that's where people are struggling to handicap who this team is and where they belong.
Well, what about TCU Baylor? TCU favored by 3 now. At Baylor, potential pitfall, but everything's been a potential, you know, hiccup for them all season long. How do you feel about this game?
You know my style. I'm a contrarian better, and I think there's going to be a lot of public all over TCU. And when they've done as well against the spread this year as they have, there's a lot of people that have hopped on the wave and done extraordinarily well. I bet Baylor last week. It's one of my worst bets of the year, quite honestly. That was a bet that you could see within the first 7 minutes was not going to cash. And for as bad as Baylor played, the fact that the line is what this is pretty interesting. Now, the concern I have for TCU in that Texas game, the offense didn't do much, and I don't know how many times TCU was tackled behind the line of scrimmage is double digits.
It was amazing.
It was bad.
Yeah.
It was. And this is a Baylor team that can get after you. So I think that's a concern here. Yes, I would lean toward Baylor in this one just because the line is just quite simply spectacular. But I've been burned by TCU plenty this year, and it wouldn't shock me if I'm burned again.
Horrible week for the Pac-12. UCLA yep. losing as a double-digit favorite. Oregon losing as a double-digit favorite. So it's last team up in the Pac-12 with one loss is USC. But they've got to play the Bruins. And USC is a three-point favorite. I'm hearing a lot of love for UCLA. Are you among that group?
I am, but I'm a little nervous about the love because I do really like this UCLA team. I think the mix at quarterback and running back is good. I think their pass rush could be a problem. Obviously, the injury to Travis Dye hurts. I think UCLA still is in a position to win this game. Total in this at 76, it feels about right. But I think it's going to be a stay away for me. If I had to make a pick, I would pick UCLA. But this is a pretty resilient USC team. By the way, we've sort of come full circle in USC. This is a team that got a ton of offseason hype, and now it's somehow maybe a little underrated. Are we there, depending on the outcome of this game, that we've kind of just, they sort of assume the role as a playoff contender without much,
they played
without
nobody.
A ton of fanfare.
Yeah.
What about Oregon? My Oregon State Beavers, right? That thrilling 17-14 win. I get it. It's actually fair to have questions, but the fact that they've been able to turn it around, albeit against a limited competition this quickly, is pretty remarkable.
Let me go to a couple other games that have nothing to do with college football playoff implications but are interesting, because one is Bedlam, which we always make a big deal about every year, right? And this year just means nothing whatsoever. Oklahoma, 7.5-point favorites against Oklahoma State.
I really like Oklahoma in this game. I really do. Oklahoma State has had an odd year. They've done some merry-go-round at quarterback. It's just been strange. And this is a great rivalry. But the all-time series in this is 90-19 in Oklahoma's favor. Seven ties in there, by the way. Bring back ties. I am pro tie. So 90-19. Oklahoma State won it last year. Oklahoma has dominated. I know that 100 years of football doesn't indicate what's going to happen here, but Oklahoma's had a really rough season. Lost 5 games already. Continues to lose games that it shouldn't. And yet, this is a game that it will be up for. And I think Dylan Gabriel is very capable. So I think this line speaks volumes. It would not shock me to see Oklahoma just absolutely rolling this one.
All right, and finally, Adam, because this is your alma mater, Minnesota and Iowa. The total is an unbelievable 32.5. Your thoughts, sir?
Yeah, I'm staring at a 32 right now. Steam on the 32. It is wild. And yet it feels right. So Iowa's, what, number 124 in scoring offense and number 5 in scoring defense. It's going to be cold. You're not going to have snow, it sounds like. So I do think Iowa has a really good shot in this game. And can we talk about how disgraceful it is that Iowa could play in the Big Ten Championship?
Yes.
Like, what a disgrace. Get rid of divisions. I mean, let's be real here. You know, I went there. I kind of like the under. I think it's going to be a really gross football game. And I'm thrilled that it actually carries some meaning, because the total in here is still hard to stomach.
Well, we'll all enjoy it just for the spectacle of that total. I think it's just phenomenal.
Matters.
It matters as implications. Could be in a Big Ten championship, for goodness sakes. Adam, appreciate it. Enjoy the weekend of college football, sir.
Thanks, man. Talk to you soon.
Adam Kramer, everybody, at Kegs and Eggs, writes for Bleacher Report, and of course at VSiN.com every week. Kramer's betting guide to week whatever it is, this week, week 12 in college football.
I just see that total creeping closer and closer to the Kelly guessing lines number.
Which was what?
37.
Oh, it's coming your way.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of action coming in, I understand.
Value on the over, according to Kelly Vidlin's guessing lines. We'll come back. NFL talk, teaser time, more of this Barnwell piece. What's been unsustainable or not for teams? It's a numbers game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Football fans can turn a loss into a win with the king of sports books. Just place a single first touchdown score prop bet on any Monday or Thursday night pro football game. And if your bet loses, you'll receive up to $25 back in free bets. This offer is available all season long. Wager confidently and take your game to the next level with BetMGM. Just log into your account or download the BetMGM app and sign up today. Then wager on any player to score the first touchdown in any Monday or Thursday pro football game. And if your bet misses, you'll get up to $25 back in free bets. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. Must be 21 years of age or older to wager. New and existing customer offer. All promotions are subject qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable free bets or site credit. Free bets expire 7 days from issuance. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Promotional offer not available in Mississippi, Nevada, or New York.
In the true spirit of holiday giving, VSiN presents Betsgiving.
Betsgiving.
Betsgiving!
Betsgiving?
That's right, Betsgiving. It's a betting contest pitting VSiN shows and experts against each other in a Thanksgiving weekend battle for VSiN bragging rights.
To learn more about VSiN's Betsgiving, go to VSiN.com/Betsgiving.
Very nice. All right, we're doing it again. We did it this summer. Somehow I lost, by the way, this summer. Got snaked out from under me.
Who was it? You Follow the Money and then Tim and Sean, right? That were
it was me. It was a numbers game. It was Follow the Money. It was Danny Burke.
Ooh, Danny. And gotta watch out for Doris Burke's nephew. Always gotta watch out.
You really gotta watch out for him. Daniel Burke, who I believe wrote part of the Federalist Papers back in the 1700s. Doesn't his name sound like very colonial?
I love Danny. I haven't seen that kid in forever.
So here's the thing. Like on the last day, even if you're way ahead, like you could still do these ridiculous props that could still get you there. So Dan had a pinch. Whoever he needed to get a hit or something got pinch hit for. So he lost that way.
That's brutal.
It was brutal. And then Follow the Money hit whatever window they needed to hit, and they ended up winning it.
Yeah, they hit a big plus money prop or parlay or something, right?
So here's how it works this year. So Thursday, on Thanksgiving itself, any bet in any of the three NFL games, any bet you want. Friday, USA-England, any bet you can find on that soccer game in the World Cup. Saturday, any side or total from one of the three rivalry games, Ohio State-Michigan, USC-Notre Dame, or Bama and Auburn, the Iron Bowl. Sunday, three NFL games, one side, one total, one money line. And then Monday, the Indianapolis-Pittsburgh Monday night game. Oh, God, that's a Monday night game. One side and one prop. There you go. 5 days of betting. Kelly, you want in on this? Collaborative effort, yes?
Oh, yeah. Oh, I'm in on it, buddy. Right. I'm in on it because the one bug I had to squash already was the you got to decide right now, am I on the numbers game team or the big bets team?
Oh.
Because I don't want any accusations. You know how this things get competitive around VSiN for everybody out there. In a good way, in a good way.
So did they bounce past you? Did Amal and Dave bounce past you to me? Or were you like, no, I want to be with Gil?
No, it was rightfully brought up. And then we decided, the bosses might have other plans, but we decided that it made more sense for me and you to do it. So it was two and then they have two. Instead of like 3-1.
Works for me.
It's me and you, buddy.
Let's do it. I was solo last time. We'll do it.
I'm going to handle all the college football. You'll handle all the soccer.
By the way, Circa's put out odds for this. Mitch and Paul Follow the Money. They are your short shots to win it at 7-1. And we come in next at +950. Everybody else, including the Matt Heumann solo project at 11-1 and JVT at 11-1, they lead the double digit parade. Bill 80 getting no respect, nor the Greg Peterson experience. They bring up the rear at 20-1. What do you think about that? You think Greg Peterson is somewhere in a corner stewing right now?
I don't believe that no matter how much you respect one show on this network or one person on this network more than the other, I don't know that there should be as big of a gap in from 7-1 to 20-1 in a contest like this.
5 days of betting should not determine anything.
It's only five bets, right? It's one bet a day.
I don't know. Is it?
I think so.
I couldn't even tell by what I just read if it was one bet a day. Because some of them say three NFL games, one side, one total, one money line, right? So, no, it's not one bet.
No, it's more. You're right. Yeah, you're right.
Okay. Back to the Barnwell piece. Bill Barnwell, who does such a great job at ESPN. Again, what is sustainable in the NFL? What is unsustainable? And the key of all this, again, as bettors, as football viewers, and we've all been football fans our whole lives, we watch football games, we process what we process, but our brain doesn't capture everything. There's stuff that happens over the course of a year. Outcome in one score games, Until we're reminded of that, we don't necessarily process that. Performance inside the red zone and outside the red zone. Performances on third downs. Let's take the New York Giants. This won't surprise a lot of people. Because even Giants fans, right, we've said it. Even Giants fans will admit they've gotten the best of it this year. Giants are 5-1 in games decided by 7 points or fewer. Their biggest win has come by 8 points. They've been outscored 131-123 through the first three quarters of their games, but plus 22-point differential in the fourth quarter, which ranks fifth in the league. So unless you believe they have some magic in the fourth quarter that they don't in the first three, that's kind of been their season.
I mean, that's like the definition of you're getting the bounces to go your way,
you're
right?
Getting the bounces. By the way, their defense ranks 26th in expected point average per play outside the red zone, but they've been the league's best inside the 20 by the same metric. They've allowed teams to make it to the red zone at the third highest rate on a per-game basis, but they're only allowing those offenses to convert 38.2% of the time, a mark topped only by that Broncos defense. And on first and second down, the Giants have been the league's fourth worst defense by EPA per play. But on third and fourth down, you guessed it, they morphed into the third best defense. So despite the fact that opposing offenses have the fifth fewest yards to go to pick up third downs against the Giants also, they've been the third best defense at avoiding conversions. So everything has gone the Giants' way in their 7-2 season. Now that part, this is the one team where our brains probably have processed it.
Yeah.
Let me just do
it. I mean, they're not being given any respect by anybody, right? Like they don't,
yeah.
They're not getting respect by the sports books. I saw on ESPN this morning that their FPI model or whatever had them ranked as the 24th best team in the NFL. Like it is.
24th at 7-2.
24th at 7-2.
Yeah.
So, nobody's giving them any respect. I'm laying the three this week, but outside of that, Gil, I'm really hoping to hit that middle. I've got that over 7.5 wins on them. These dynamic win totals we talk about all the time, a lot of great value. Over 7.5 and under 10, we're under 10.5. That half's going to be big. Under 10. Need to hit that. Want to hit that middle.
Other teams pointed out in this Barnwell article. Cleveland's been unlucky, I'll summarize, based on losses in close games, fumble recovery woes. Falcons have been lucky, well-timed defensive performance, fumble recoveries, opposing special teams. The Bills, believe it or not, at 6-3 have been unlucky. Red zone offense, third down defense, probably will regress to the mean and positively for them. The Dolphins have been lucky, one-score game record, hidden special teams performance. The Jaguars have been unlucky, both in one-score game performance, offensive performance, and key situations. And let me just seize on one last team. The Las Vegas Raiders. What's your guess, Kelly? Lucky or unlucky this year?
Oh, man. Now I feel like the way you're asking me this question, that they've somehow been more lucky. They've been lucky.
It's a complete trick question. They're the one team that you can make a case on both sides. They are the conundrum of all these teams.
Oh, really? Okay.
So there's... In one-score games last year, the Raiders were 7-2. So everyone was like, well, that's going to regress. Well, they're 0-6 in one-score games this year.
Okay, and that's been pretty well documented.
Worst record for any team, obviously. And here, if you drill down deeper on that, they've held a lead or had a chance to take the lead on offense in the fourth quarter in every one of those games. And obviously, they've come up short each and every time. They've converted just 51.9% of its red zone trips. That's 22nd in the league. It's been the league's seventh best offense by EPA per play outside the red zone, 22nd by the same stat once it gets there. So all of those are saying how unlucky they've been. But before you start to say, oh, well, the Raiders, they're actually way better than we think they are. Before you get to that, they've recovered nearly 69% of fumbles. So they've had tremendous fumble luck. That's the league's top rate.
Wow.
Their offense ranks 22nd on early downs and 5th by EPA per play on third down and fourth down. So they've actually been better on conversion plays on third and fourth down. They've gotten the best of the high leverage situations.
Hmm.
Opposing kickers, that's another thing, right? We don't process.
Oh, man.
We talk about free throw luck in basketball. Opposing team free. Well, how's your free throw defense been? You know, right? It's a mythical
talk
thing.
About a stat I've never looked up before. Teams that have the most missed field goals against them?
Opposing kickers have gone, get this, 11-17 against the Raiders this year. So that's the worst conversion rate.
In total?
11 of 17 against the Raiders. So opposing kickers,
Doesn't that feel like a low amount of field goal attempts for a year?
Well, yeah, but they've only made 11 of 17.
Scoring touchdowns on them.
So as bad as it's gone for them, somehow it could be worse. And now their schedule's about to get a whole lot more difficult. They've gone 2-7 against what Football Outsiders believes to have been the NFL's easiest schedule to date. And from here on out, they play the league's 14th toughest schedule, including season-ending run against the 49ers and the Chiefs, among others. So, I don't. All of that is very interesting. By the way, your pro tip of the hour is just about that. Your brain doesn't process everything. Keep in mind that there are analytics that you should factor into all your handicapping. It's your pro tip of the hour right here at VSiN. For pro subscribers only, VSiN.com. We do 20 a day. You can sort them by sport and by show there. Bill Krakenberger on the other side from New Jersey next. Numbers Game, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.